You are listening to Grandpa Lempsheets on RadioArian.com.
Welcome back to the 35th, that's right, 35th installment of the Church of the Lampshade Show. As always, your host, Grandpa Lampshade. I can't ever foresee there being another host of the Church of the Lampshade Show, except for your humble host. So glad you joined us this week. As always, glad you could come by. And as always, we're appreciative of those financially supporting the show. We like to get that out of the way right off the bat. A humble three supporters this week. Well, you know, we appreciate what we get. Those of you who find it within your hearts to support the Lampshade, always appreciate it. If you want to be a part of that, that information's at the bottom of the description page. We got snail mail. We got Bitcoin. If you have some sort of weird cryptocurrency, let me know. I'll try to get you a address for that. Also, emails down there, grandpalampshade1@gmail.com. Listener questions, comments, always welcome. Well, for the most part, always welcome. And more than likely, we'll use them on the show, unless I think you're just messing with me or trolling with me, or if I think it's something of a really private nature on your part that, you know, you might not want shared with everybody. So, yeah, three supporters this week. Tony, showing some love for the Lampshade. Very, very much appreciated. Let's see, what else do we got here? Hope these shekels find you well. Rock Dad, thank you, Rock Dad, coming through once again for us this week. And our guy we can always count on, Mr. T, Grandpa Lampshade, God bless and keep you. Are you going to write another book? And the answer is probably not. I really enjoyed the book. Yes, there are two Lampshade books out there floating around, folks. Two attempts at it. And I did enjoy it. It's a lot of work. It was a lot of difference moving from, writing articles. Articles are kind of more my forte, you know, writing articles, and maybe I ought to figure out a way to go back to doing that. I don't know. Writing articles was very much, I enjoyed doing that. The book thing was cool, but it's moving into that longer format, and I never could write a really, really long, like a tome. I don't know how they did, like Mein Kampf, I guess because they were in prison and they had a lot of time on their hands, but I can't see myself ever being able to write like a really long book. But, you know, yeah, I, for the most part, just the amount of effort and benefit return is, you know, just not there. I mean, as far as speaking the truth and getting the message out there, I can do so much more with this show, quite honestly, than a book. And second of all, just to be blunt, as far as money making, the last book pretty much went down in flames in that department. So you put, it's a little blackpilling to put all this effort in to try to write a book, even though super long or anything, but try to put a book together, and then, you know, it's just not there. So no plans at this point to write another book. Again, thank you to our supporters. I was thinking before the show, you know, with everybody that listens to the show, you couldn't fit that many people like into a church building in town. I mean, it's a huge number. And I was thinking about how that works as far as like in a physical building, because you pass that plate around and there's that social pressure, you know, and people feel that social pressure. And when the plate comes in from them, if they don't put nothing in there, they reach in there and like tap the bottom of the offering plate. You know what I'm talking about. You know if you're a tapper or not. You reach in there and tap the bottom of the plate, you know, so people think you put something in. Put something in there, or you take your three ones, you know, and wad them up and put them in there where the people can't tell, you know, you only put $3 in. Because they're so, even though nobody's gonna say anything, people are in each side of you, and you don't want to look like that one guy doesn't put anything in. It's how social pressure, I was just thinking really honestly more in a context of how social pressure works, even when it's unspoken social pressure, because you got people on each side of you and you don't want to be the guy that just takes the plate, just keeps just keeps handing it down. So you feel obligated to at least look like you're putting something in there. You know, where this show, you know, everybody listens to it in the solitude of their own home. So, or out jogging or on their way to work or whatever. So that social pressure is non-existent. In fact, if anything, the fact that everybody knows that like 99.99% of everybody that listens doesn't contribute financially, I guess you could say the social pressure is going the other way. Telling how many supporters I got each week, maybe shooting myself in the foot. I don't know, but we're going to keep on doing what we're doing. So again, if you really want in on that, encourage you to do so. It's always very much appreciated. We're going to have do something different when we get to the Christian message, the sermon in the Church of the Lampshade later on the show. And I think it's going to be something pretty fun. I think y'all, well, I don't know if it'll be fun. That might not be the right description, but I think it'll be something you'll get something out of and maybe help you understand certain things as people, as your beliefs are attacked. So look forward to that. I think it'll be a great discussion. As always, we like to sit around. We like to visit before we get into our sermon. And we're never short of things to visit about. By the way, don't forget on Fridays to do the Daily Nationals, a.k.a. Clown World in Review with Sven Longshanks here on the network. And that's a fun thing. If y'all haven't tuned into that, you need to do it. It's only 30 minutes, and it's different from what we do here. We actually take a news story, and we try to, for the Friday installment of the show, we try to take on something not heavy, you know, something just kind of, you know, clownish, you know. I mean, it's serious in the sense that it's a reflection of societal and civilizational decay, aka clown world, that we see around us. But it's usually stuff we can find that we can laugh about. And you know me, I'll find a way to laugh about just about anything if I can. I try to find the humor in it. I think that's important. So yeah, if you've been missing out or hadn't had a chance to tune into that, you probably want to check it out. I think it's a lot. I really enjoy doing it. And once again, I'm kind of working on another... it's going to be just a random from time to time show that I'm going to do besides these two shows. And, you know, it's not going to be on a regular schedule. Just when you get it, you get it. But when it does come out, when that does happen, of course, I'll let y'all know. And you're not going to want to miss it because it's going to be something different. It's going to be something really, really interesting. And so, yeah, you're going to want to get in on that when it time comes around. And like I say, when it does, I'll be sure and be plugging it here and on my limited social media, which of course is Gab. I'm sorry. But so look forward to that. That's going to be a really neat project and it's starting to come together. I think we'll see that bearing some fruit in the next week or so, for sure. So look forward to that. Stuff in the news, things everybody's talking. Of course, the Trump impeachment nonsense is still good. This is the most retarded thing I've ever seen. If nothing else, I guess if there's something to look at and a positive with this is the fact that the media continues to just completely burn down any credibility they may have had left. I really don't think they had any left, so they probably, maybe they realize that on some level. They have no credibility left, so they don't even care. They're just burning what little cinders are down. And going on with this full-on communist narrative, because they keep going on about, you know, the Trump thing and he was trying to get Ukraine to investigate. But, you know, everybody knows. I mean, I think pretty much after the whole corn pop story, Biden was pretty much done. I mean, I think now he's polling behind Pocahontas, who was just like a meme. She's like a human living meme. And so, you know, so his campaign pretty much done. And I think some of this is just they were in a panic because they're like, well, good night. We can't run Pocahontas. I mean, we can't run any of these other people. Biden is the last person they got that kind of has some sort of credibility. And yet he's like so creepy. And then he comes up with these weirdo stories like the whole corn pop thing. And so, you know, it was pretty much done. But now all of a sudden it's all in the news. Like, you know, he's a serious contender in all of this kabuki theater. And it's funny to watch the media go on about this because they just keep saying, you know, well, because they go on about this story without ever mentioning what it is that Biden and his son were neck deep in. I mean, they were openly, when this was happening, They were going around bragging about doing it. Biden, especially Joe Biden, was bragging about getting this prosecutor fired who had the audacity to persecute his corrupt son, try to prosecute his corrupt son. And he was holding up like $1 billion in our money, thanks, and, you know, for Ukraine to be sure that that happened. But they don't mention any of that. They just act like, yeah, but they do their usual thing. You know, when they do kind of mention it in passing, they just say some claims, they leave it vague, some claims that have largely been debunked. Yeah, they just say it's been debunked. It hasn't been. It's like Pizzagate. They just keep saying Pizzagate was debunked. It's a conspiracy theory that's been debunked. Really? Where? Can you give us some sort of like reference material? You know, can you point and show to us exactly where and how and the documentation of where these claims have been debunked? Could you explain to us the weirdo pedophilia references that we've seen in these emails or in this quote unquote artwork? Would you point to this and show to us there from there where those things have been debunked? No, but they just tell us it's debunked, so we're supposed to go along with it and be, you know, believe it that it's debunked. Well, I guess the communist rank and file believe it. Yeah. Believe whatever they're told because, you know, they're edgy anarchist communist types or whatever the hell they think they are. Yeah, so, the, yeah, you know, nothing says that like believing everything you're told. So, you know, stick it to the man. And yeah, they just tell you it's debunked. You're supposed to believe it because they said so. And I, again, I don't know if they just don't even care. They realize they have no credibility. So what the hell? Why not? Or if they really live in such a bubble that they actually think that if they say that, everybody else will believe them. I'm not sure which it is. I guess in the end, it doesn't really matter, but it is kind of humorous to watch it take place. Yeah, of course, speaking of Trump, you know, you start talking about Trump and people have got to have like this black or white, like love, hey, you know, oh, you what, are you supporting Trump now again? You know, he's, you know, no, this is one of the advantages, I think, of trying to focus your ideals or your pursuit or what you speak about around truth instead of around a person. You know, if you try to put you try to center everything around a person, and at some point you're still talking about a person that's going to have faults and things, and you wind up being disappointed. Again, talking about Trump, when the whole 2016 campaign happened, and we essentially were a large part of memeing him into office, and we see all these normicons acting like they're shit tier memes, you know, with what memed him into office, and we all know that right wing edge memes were the real part of what did that. But, you know, one of those memes was that whole God Emperor thing, and it was this over-the-top thing, and it never ceases to amaze me that when he actually got elected, you saw people on our own side like start believing that, and then when it didn't come true, they got all disappointed. And that's the danger when you put everything on a person instead of on the truth. Yeah, you know, I was at the time scratching my head going, people, this is just a meme. You know, don't start buying into your own bullshit, as the saying goes. But yeah, I mean, the truth's the truth. I mean, if Trump does something good, I'm going to talk about it. If he's being unfairly attacked, I'll talk about it. If he's being a shill for Israel, which there's no lack of material for that, I'll talk about it. Because I try to focus on the truth, not on a person. You know, it's not a case of, well, Trump's our guy or Trump's a complete shield for the Jews. I mean, it's just the truth is the truth. It's like we were talking last week, you know, when the Somali Muslim from Minnesota, Omar, you know, when she said that all the Congress people are basically bought off by the Israel lobby. That was the truth. It doesn't mean I support importing Somali Muslims and putting them all running Congress. But I mean, the truth's the truth. It doesn't matter if it came from her or anybody else. So I guess at the end, I'm just saying, basically, if I'm saying something positive about Trump, it doesn't mean I'm quote unquote on the Trump train or anything. I'm just seeking and trying to look for the truth. And it's something you should try to think about doing because you won't be disappointed. Yeah, like I say, if you center everything and all of your efforts on a person, it's too easy to try to put too much faith in that. You know, and I think people really got caught up in that. You know, if we just get Trump elected, it's all going to turn around, which was never realistic, not under this current system. You're not going to put anybody in there who's going to turn it around. You look at the just lukewarm efforts that Trump has tried to make. You know, we're going to bring in more immigrants than ever. According to Trump, he wants to bring in more immigrants than ever. He's pretty much, I think, held up with that. Just not illegal immigrants. So I guess the manual labor job market is saturated enough now. We don't need to worry about that. Don't worry, he's going to bring people in on these visas so they can take your higher paying jobs for less money. Thanks. You know, thanks, Trump. But you look at the just lukewarm efforts that he has made and the amount of pushback and the amount of hysteria from the Washington, D.C. bubble about these things. Now, just imagine you actually got somebody, your hardcore right wing in there. They would have no choice but to try to get enough of the military to go in and basically round up the entirety of Congress and the Senate and put them in a camp and just declare martial law and himself Führer. That's the only way you could do it. You're not going to work in the confines of the current system. I mean, no matter who you put in there, they're not going to be able to work in the confines of this current system. It's too powerful. It's, I mean, the whole system is designed to make sure that doesn't happen. It's like I'm recording this show and I use software that is designed for recording music, podcast, whatever. I mean, it's designed for that. If I was going to create, like shoot a little miniature movie, you know, and I tried to use the same software that I used to record the show, it wouldn't work. Why? Because it's not even designed for that. You know, it doesn't even have video capability. This is for recording sound, is for doing basically a radio show or a podcast, which is basically an internet radio show. And the same thing, the current system is designed specifically to make sure that the status quo remains, that the trajectory of things continues to go down the right path. It doesn't matter if you elect Trump. It doesn't matter if you It doesn't matter who you put in there. It doesn't matter who you were to, if you elected somebody that was sure enough or a guy, there's no way they can work within the confines of the current system to change things, because that's what you see around you is what the system's designed to do. It's functioning properly. People look at the government and the systems of the bureaucracy and things such as this, and they scratch their head and they bang the table in frustration because, you know, it's not working for them. It's not doing what it's supposed to do. But it is. It is doing what it's supposed to do. It's doing exactly what it's designed to do. Maybe it's not doing what it was originally designed to do by the founders of the nation, but that's irrelevant. This isn't 1776, folks. This, you know, this is current year. And the system, as it has morphed and has changed over the years, over the centuries even, is doing what it is currently designed to do. And it's just silly. It's nonsensical to think that anybody could step in and work within the confines of this current system to make it suddenly do what it's not intended, it's not designed to do. It's as silly as me trying to shoot a movie with podcast software. It is not even designed to do that. It's not capable of doing that. And yet people have that mindset. And when it doesn't work, they get mad. They get mad. They get frustrated. Some of them go berserk. But there's no reason for that. The system is working as designed. Again, if somebody came to power, somebody managed to be elected out of the current system, the only way they could stop the trajectory of things and turn it around is to seize authoritarian power. That's it. That's the only way. And I've always said that we're heading towards authoritarianism, one way or the other. Because, yes, the current system works for the communists. But at some point, they'll just feel like, well, we've got so much power now. We have so much authority now. We don't need to put up with the charade anymore. We'll just throw it out the window and declare ourselves authoritarian, you know, single party rule, whatever, however they decide to dress it up. And that'll be that. But you'll be living under a communist authoritarian regime. Likewise, if somebody not a communist, somebody on the right wing, come to power, the only way they're going to stop the current trajectory, stop the communists, and stop the is just again to seize authoritarian power for themselves, and start turning things around without going through all this theater of, you know, making a lukewarm proposal that's been in your realm of the authority of the office for hundreds of years, and then have some rando judge somewhere be able to say, no, you can't do that, it's illegal. And you have to wait a year to go to the Supreme Court where they may or may not side with you, with precedent. And it's easy to look around and get blackpilled because the trajectory doesn't seem to change. You know, I mean, we talk about it, we point it out, you can go on social media and there's no shortage of people talking about, you know, how put out they are with it and how they disagree with it. But yet it seems as though nothing changes. It seems as though the trajectory remains the same, but it's not a surprising thing. Again, this is a massive system, and it's doing what it's designed to do. But remember this, all government, doesn't matter if it's authoritarian, it doesn't matter if what it is, it has to have the legitimacy. It has to have a fig leaf of legitimacy with the people. It's a requirement. You may think that's not true. You may think somebody can just seize power, and anybody that disagrees with them, they can throw them in a camp and they can kill them, and then nobody can counter them. But that's not true. It's not how it works. I've said this many times. I've pointed this out many times. Again, there's a reason an absolute dictator, you know, will still have quote unquote elections where he's basically the only candidate. He gets 100% turnout and 100% of the vote. There is a reason. You may think it's stupid, but it's not stupid. There is a reason. There has to be a fig leaf of legitimacy with the people. I don't care how authoritarian somebody is. I don't care how much of a dictator somebody is. They cannot rule without the consent of the people. The people have to go along with it. They have to be getting something back out of the deal, whether that's a sense of security, whether that's a sense of nationalistic and, you know, ethnic pride, whatever the case may be. The people have to feel like they're a part of it. They have to feel like they have to consent to it. They have to feel as though there's something in it for them, and not just in a materialistic basis. I mean, they have to feel like they have to buy into it, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. They have to buy into it. They have to believe in it for a reason. And those reasons can vary, but they have to do it. And so why is that important? Why is that important? And I feel as we talk about this, I'm kind of covering some ground that we've covered before, but it's a really important point. And that is, again, you look back at the communists of old, whether it's the Bolsheviks that took over in the Soviet Union, or the communists that the National Socialists fought against in Germany. There's when you look at those people, what were the communists promising the people? They were promising the workers, you know, to a fair living wage. They were promising them all of these things. So many of the labor unions at the time were communist, because those were the only people basically offering to stand up for the workers were the communists. And so the people felt like, you know, here's somebody speaking up for me. And so when the communists came to power, even as bad as it was, there's a certain amount of the population that felt like at some point they were going to get something out of it. And you have to remember, up to that point, it was industrialists just reaped all this money. They were working little kids in these factories. And if they died, they basically let their family carry them off, stuck another body in there, and kept on traveling. They didn't care. People were working for pennies a day in these horrific, horrific conditions. And some of them, again, children, because they could pay them even less. People's life expectancy was short. People live in this modern world and they cannot grasp how shitty things were, historically speaking, just a very short time ago. You had child laborers, you had all these people in these factories, and the conditions were just deplorable beyond what you can imagine. You know, I mean, if you work in a factory, few factories may be left in this country today. If you work in a factory and there's an accident and someone is killed, it's a big deal. it is a huge deal. There's a huge investigation. Everything stops. There's a huge investigation. Probably in the end, the factory is going to have to pay the victim's family millions of dollars, whether they were actually at fault or not, or it was just simply an accident. Maybe even the person that got killed was being careless. It doesn't matter. They're going to be paid. You know, they're going to have to settle, or there's going to be a settlement paid. And it is. It's a huge investigation. The government comes in, looks at it. Wasn't that way. Just a few decades ago, really. It wasn't that way back then. When the Bolsheviks came to power, when the National Socialists were fighting against the communist labor unions in Germany, in Weimar Germany, it wasn't that way. People got killed in factories all the time and no one gave a shit. You know, fine, get him out of here. He can't work anymore. Get another body. Well, I've got this 11-year-old kid. Can he work? Yeah, stick him in there. Maybe all of this black dust they're breathing isn't good for him. Who cares? What do you expect me to do about it? Get me another cigar. You know, the guy that owns the place is getting filthy rich and everybody else being victimized. You hear people going about slavery, slavery, slavery. These people were really, in a lot of ways, treated much worse than slaves ever were. That is a fact. It's not a popular fact, but it's the truth. And of course, we know the truth is never popular in this day and age. So you have to understand that as bad, because as bad as we look back in hindsight's 2020, and you're like, why would people ever go along with communism? You don't realize how shitty things were. And then you have these communists come up and they're at least saying, you know, we're going to just, because there comes a point where people's bitterness gets to the point, you don't even care if your life gets better. You just want to see somebody else suffer. You imagine working in these deplorable factories and your kids are working in there too, and you're in bad health. You're watching your kids, they have hands like an old man and they're 12. And no matter how hard you work, no matter how hard they work, you're going to have a short life. You're going to be lucky if you can buy enough to eat this week and pay the rent on your shitty little basement hovel that you're living in. And you look over there, there's the guy running the factory, you know, filthy rich. He's just living a life, a dream. At some point in time, you're like, okay, maybe my life won't get better, but I want to see that guy suffer. I want to see him suffer like I'm suffering. I want to see him suffer like I'm seeing everybody else around me suffer. And the communists offered that. I mean, even if the communists, some of them probably were like, yeah, these guys aren't really going to help us, but I think they will stick it to these guys running everything. Of course, the communists ultimately, all they did was by and large replace the guy. You know, it's like, okay, look here, we got rid of that guy. Yeah, now who's going to be there? Me. I'm going to be the guy getting all the money. Y'all keep working, enslaving, and by the way, for less money and less food and a shorter lifetime. But the point here is that they were offering the people something. What are the modern day communists offering the people? We spend so much time focusing on our own efforts. We never think to flip it over and look at the, you know, look at the other side of this deal. What are the modern day communists? What's the modern day leftist? What's the modern day Marxist offering to the people? Are they offering to make their lives better? Well, I mean, the closest thing they're doing to that is offering, you know, screaming about student loan debt forgiveness. I mean, I guess that's something. But what are they offering the people as a whole? I mean, what are they really? What's their message? If you're white in America or Western Europe, whatever the case may be, I mean, they're not offering anything. They're screeching at you. They're constantly lecturing you about how all the problems of the world are your fault. Imagine the communists of old. You know, imagine the Lenin of old or the Stalins of old or whatever coming to power, by telling the workers that everything was their fault. You know, we're going to come to power. We need your support. Our message is that you suck. If you would work harder and like start getting your kids younger working in the factory, everything would be better. The problem is you suck. I mean, what kind of support would they really ever get? I look at these things and, you know, so it is what it is. We have a hard time sometimes getting our message of truth out because there are these mechanisms of power in place to make sure that doesn't happen. But yet on the flip side of it, no matter how much big of a megaphone they have, it's like we started off talking at the beginning of the show, but laughing about how the media acts as though they can sit here and say, it's been debunked, and everybody would just go along with that. But I mean, really, I think the truth of the matter is the only people who go along with that, the people are going to, you know, they're already believers. They're already communists. You know, yeah, the communists are going to listen to it and eat it up. But, I mean, who else is? I mean, at some point, anybody with two brain cells rubbing together are going to be like, okay, wait, you say it's been debunked. Can you point me to that? I'd like to look at that myself. And they, of course, can't, because it hasn't been. They don't have anything to offer the people. All they have is screeching at them how everything's their fault and how they suck. And how if they would just, you know, import the third world, everything would be better. In fact, if you just cease to exist, everything would be better. Now, how are the people going to get behind that? I mean, who the hell's going to get behind that? I guess some people that on some sort of fundamental level are kind of like suicidal or, you know, masochistic. You know, they get something out of it. Most of the people that promote this, they promote it thinking that they're somehow going to be exempt. Yeah, I made a point on this last installment of the Daily Nationalist, a.k.a. Clown World in Review. We did a story on Victoria's Secret and, you know, their big announcement. They're adding a dude. They're adding a trans person. And I made a point there kind of in passing, but it bears repeating now. You know, this agenda, these communists, the white people, I'm talking about white people that support the Marxist agenda. You know, they do it because they think that in the end they're going to get a pass. You know, and I made the point there, whether you're a homosexual or whether you're a transgender or whatever, you're just being used as a tool by these people. If, you know, if you're white, it doesn't, in the end, it isn't going to matter if you're a transgender or a homosexual. If you're white, when you're no longer a useful tool, the bigger plan is still in play for you. It's still in play for you. You are still going to be on the receiving end of what everybody else is getting. And these white people who support this communism, I'm talking about the rank and file white people, younger people usually, that support this. They support it. If they're conscious of it on any level, they realize it's an anti-white agenda. But they think because they're supporting it, they'll be exempted. They think if this all plays out, they'll say, well, this one gets a pass. He was one of the good ones. He was one of the good ones. He was a good thinker, you know, and yet you look at how they are now even. And they go around hoping not to get eaten by each other. And periodically they do. Periodically the pack turns on one of their own and rips them to shreds because they might say something not worded perfectly correct that somebody can stand on their head and construe as being insensitive to the victim group of this week. And they'll rip them to shreds to make an example out of them. So the people that do support it are people that are deluding themselves into thinking that they're going to be exempted. In fact, they're going to be put at the top. They're going to be one of the ones sitting up. They're going to be the owner that's sitting there smoking the big cigar while the peasants work under them. And heaven forbid, the communist agenda once again, you know, bears fruit here in America. They're going to be in for a really rude awakening. I mean, it even extends beyond, you know, I specifically say white people because it's an anti-white agenda, I mean, on its face. But you could even look at it in a broader scope. I mean, you look at these other races. They sit here and they promise these other races, the black and brown people, they tell them, you know, basically, if we get rid of the white people, you're going to be the ones. But the fact of the matter is that those who are pulling the strings at the top of this, the reality is if you're a black or brown person, these people pulling the strings just feel like you're dumb enough that, you know, they get the white people out of the way. You'll do whatever they direct you to do. They don't have any great love for you. Their promises of, you know, they're going to give you all the good stuff and your life, you'll be the guy sitting in the mansion on the hill. They have absolutely no intention of that. They look down on you more than the most extreme quote unquote racist because they think if they can replace the white population with y'all, y'all are so stupid, you'll be easy to control. You'll be easy to manipulate. Don't kid yourself. The people pulling the strings don't plan to give that position up, to hand it to some low-level person. They plan to hold on to that power as long as they can. Let's go ahead and get ready, get in, fill those pieces. We're gonna do something fun this week in our Christian message for the show. And I'm going to try to get this all done in one show. I don't want to drag it out over two shows and because the point is fairly simple that I want to make, but I got to kind of cover quite a bit of ground to make it. And I think we can do it here in one show. We're going to try anyway. We're going to do our best. So get in here, fill those pews. Let's get into our Christian message this week here in the Church of the Lampshade. And a lot of times I'll try to give y'all what scripture we're going to reference ahead of time. I know some people like that. We're not going to do that this week because we're just going to kind of hit a lot. We're going to hit a lot to try to get to our point here. And what we're going to talk about this week is the fate of the apostles and how things turned out. And I think more importantly, why? Why? Because when you look at what happens to the apostles, or what's believed to have happened to the apostles, their fates, as it were. This is something not all of which are known, by the way. One has to wonder why. Why? And we're going to get to that. And kind of what brought me to think we'd discuss that this week. But if it was a, let's just put it this way, if it was a visual novel game, every route seems to be what you'd call a bad end. So for our opening scripture here, let's see here. Let's go to Matthew chapter 10. Let's start with verse 28. And this is Jesus speaking. And fear not them which kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear him which is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a farthing, and one of them shall not fall on the ground without your father. But the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear ye not, therefore, ye are of more value than many sparrows. The numbers, the hairs of your head are all numbered. It means you're precious enough in the eyes of the Lord that, I mean, he even knows the fate of your hairs. Now, again, this isn't to say like God micromanages your life or something like that. But what it is saying that God understands, God knows as you are seeking him and as you are going down the path that he lays before you. Look, he knows. He's making the point here that God does indeed, he's got this. He cares. The very numbers, the hairs on your head are numbered. Now, let's continue on, and we're going to get to this as we get into what happened to the apostles. I mean, Jesus is saying this, and he's making this point of how important you are. And these guys here, these were the original dudes. And you have to, then we're going to get into what happens to them. And it can seem like, I mean, honestly, like a contradiction as we look at it, but there has to be a reason why. And once again, just kind of hammer this point home. We'll stay in the book of Matthew. Let's go to chapter 6, verse 31. Aren't you glad that you can, by the way, you can follow this stuff along because you can always pause. If you want to follow along with your own Bible, you can pause and get your Bible and go here and read along. Make sure I'm not pulling this out of thin air here. Chapter 6, we're going to do verse 31 through the end here. This is Jesus continuing. This is Jesus speaking. Therefore, take no thought, saying, what shall we eat? Or what shall we drink? Or wherewithal shall we be clothed? For after all these things do the Gentiles seek. And once again, for our purposes, the Gentiles are the unbelievers. When you look at those who are non-believers, you know, they worry about these things. This is the things they chase after because that's all they have to look forward to is this world. So they're constantly obsessed with what they have in this world. And it's easy to fall into that trap, you know, fall into the trap of being, of measuring our value on worldly things. Man, nobody wants to be poor. Nobody wants to, you know, nobody seeks to live in poverty, and there's no like righteousness in that alone. But there's a difference between that and the way in which the world says your value, your meaning in this life is solely based on the scale of how much shit you got. And that is the society of the world we live in today, isn't it? People's very value, what you are worth, what makes your life mean anything, is strictly how much money you got. Everything. I mean, you look at the most crude and basic version of this is in black rap lyrics. You know, I got the money. Everything's I got the money. I got the car. I got all the hoes. And then that's an in-your-face, like, crude version of it. And you can sit there and laugh at that. But the fact of the matter is, that is the message of the society we live in. All of your value is measured on the scale of how much money you got. For white people, they dress it up in a less crude fashion. But the vast majority of people in this world today, in our modern Western world at least, they're no different than the black lyrics. They don't put it as crude, but they spend their life. What life value do you have? How nice of a house do you have? How nice of a car do you have? Can you take your family skiing every year? You know, and, you know, are you going to, you know, can you do this? Can you, everything, your value in this society now is measured on what? If you got the money. Again, the black rappers are putting it in a cruder fashion, but really the white guy that spends his days in a business suit, he's just trying to get the money too. I mean, and that's the way this world is. And especially for the non-believer, that's all they've got. Their entire value and meaning in life is based on, you know, you got the money in the hose. So verse 32, for all these things do the Gentiles, and I'll say the unbelievers, seek. For your heavenly Father knoweth that ye have need of these things. But seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Take therefore no thought for the morrow, for the morrow shall take thought of the things of itself. Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. So, Jesus is saying, you know, look, your Father knows what you actually need. Our problems usually start getting into what we want. And believe me, I know of which I speak. But your Father knows what you need. And, you know, look, he understands. But yet, again, we live in a society, in a world where your entire value is based on how much money you got. What can you buy? How nice car you drive? What kind of social status do you have? What does this have to do with the faith of the apostles? Well, we're going to get to that because, again, we're laying the groundwork because you read that and it sounds like, you know, God's got everything. You know, this is a message of faith and God has everything and my life's going to work out. And it will. But you have to understand that God's will is this bigger plan. Imagine you're a leader and you're at war with the leader of another nation. And you're a good leader. You know, you literally, you love your people. Just as a whole. But not only as a whole, I mean, your commanders, your officers. You know them personally and you really like them. You care about them. You would lay your life down for these people. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, when you make a plan, a battle plan, and okay, we're going to send the 7th division in here and the 5th division is going to come in from the other side, and you're looking at this and you're hoping, and it's, you know, you got confidence in the plan. But no matter how well you plan it out, a bunch of your people are going to get killed. And in fact, your officers that you know personally leading into the battle, are some of them aren't coming back. You're standing there looking at them. You're shaking their hand and telling them, you know, how proud of them you are. But because of the bigger overall plan, some of these people that you care about, the people you love, your people, you're sending them to their certain death. But I mean, you know, it's war. It's part of the plan. It's not that the plan doesn't mean that you don't care about them, but the plan itself is larger. The war itself is larger than the individual person. You have to understand that, yes, God understands your position. He does care about you. But when you understand, when you're walking in God's will, when you're trying to follow God's will, when you talk about God's will, it's that bigger plan. And the bigger plan is going to happen. Whether, you know, you come back great or whether you're a casualty, as it were, of that plan, the plan remains. Likewise, those same men, as they shake the leader's hand, many, if not all of them, in the back of their mind, yes, they want to come back, but many of them know that this mission is going to result in a lot of deaths, quite possibly their death. Do they desert? Do they run off? No. They carry out the leader's plan because they too love their people. They too love their leader. They will run away. They could take off. They could run off and run across the border to another country and hide. But they don't, because they too believe in the plan, and they too love their people, and they too love their leader. Even though they know they're walking into a very, very dangerous situation and there's very good odds that they're not coming back, they still do it. Likewise, I mean, again, God's plan is what it is. And as his people, as his servants, he doesn't care about you. But the bigger plan is what's got to be carried out. And it's not necessarily going to result in, you know, roses and riches for those carrying it out. But the plan itself is what's important. I want to get into talking about the fates of the apostles, of the different apostles. And for the most part, I mean, they all met really bad ends. I mean, these were Jesus's original dude. We're going to include the Apostle Paul in there because he had such an important role, though he didn't walk around with Jesus when Jesus was on this earth. He had an encounter after the resurrection. But we're going to lump him in there anyway. We're going to talk about these people's fates and why. Because virtually almost all of them that we know of what happened, not all of them we know exactly what happened to them, but from what we know of what became of them, and they all met really bad ends. I mean, Jesus, when he walked with them, talked about how much he loved them and things such as this, and yet they all met horrible ends. Why? I mean, did God not care about them? Why was it important? Why was it even a part of God's plan that they wind up meeting these terrible ends? Well, there's actually a reason behind it, besides the fact that they were doing God's plan in a dangerous situation. But there's actually even, because the way God's plans work is, yes, he has this overall plan. At that time, their mission was to spread the gospel throughout the world, and it was a dangerous mission. It's not that, you know, and die a horrible death. That wasn't necessary, but as a result of the dangerous mission and the deaths that so many of them faced, that too had a meaning. The fact that they met these ends, and we're going to get to that, and that's kind of the gist of what I'm wanting to get to. So let's start kind of just running along here and going through the apostles. And like I say, I really want to get all this in on today's show. I don't want to spread this out to another show. And let's start with Peter, or Simon Peter, as he also known, but Peter. And Peter kind of, I don't know, I mean, he's the rock. Jesus said, the rock, you'll be like the foundation of the church. And yet he kind of gets overlooked. Paul kind of gets a lot of the attention in the New Testament. A lot of people talk about the Apostle Paul, but Peter was like one of Jesus's like most solid dudes. I mean, you know, Simon Peter, he was one of Jesus's most solid dudes. And I thought we'd just hit a little scripture on Peter here real quick, because there's something I think would be interesting to illustrate here. Let's look in Luke. We're going to start in 22, start with verse 31. And the Lord said, Simon, Simon, behold, Satan hath desired to have you, that he may sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for thee, that thy faith fail not, and when thou art converted, strengthen thy brethren. So Jesus is giving Peter a heads up here that, you know, look, you know, Satan wants to rip you apart. And when we talk about the apostles and the guys that followed Jesus around and the guys that founded the early church, it's so easy to fall into this mindset that they weren't just people, that they had like some sort of status. You know, I mean, yes, Jesus was God incarnate. Jesus was genetically the Son of God. But the apostles were like just barely under that. But they were just people like you, like me, had the same failings. And Jesus is warning him here. Look, you know, you've got an important role to play, and Satan really wants to rip you apart beyond what you can handle. He knows what Peter can handle. Peter doesn't know what he can handle. Peter's got a fighting spirit. Peter's like, you know, I'm ready. Let's see here. Continue on with verse 33. And he said unto him, this is Peter, and he said unto him, Lord, I'm ready to go with thee, both into prison and to death. And he said, I tell thee, Peter, the cock shall not crow this day before that thou shalt thrice deny that thou knowest me. Peter, when Peter says, look, I'll go to prison and death with you. I don't care. These other guys, yeah, I got your back. And he meant it. I mean, people sometimes read this, and you, no doubt, if you've been a Christian a while, you're familiar with how this is going to turn out. But you read this, and it's like, you know, you think maybe Peter was just kind of talking, you know, blowing smoke here. He was just, but I believe that he absolutely meant it when he said it at that moment. See, he was getting ahead of himself. He thought he was ready. The Lord knew he wasn't ready yet. He thought he was at a place to where, you know, he's ready to go to prison. He's ready to face the same execution as Christ. He doesn't care. I'm your guy. I've got your back. I'm staying with you through all of this to the very end. Jesus is like, no, dude, even before tomorrow, you're going to tell people you don't even know who I am. Now, let's continue on. Staying in chapter 22, Luke 22, we're going to skip ahead to verse 54. Jesus has been arrested. They've hauled him off. Now, Peter's slipping along behind. Never mind, he didn't jump up and say, arrest me too. But he's staying along. He's slipping along. He's being stealthy. He's all in ninja mode here. And he's slipped in with the mob that has drugged Jesus off. They took him and led him and brought him into the high priest's house. And Peter followed afar off. So he slipped in. He didn't jump up and volunteer to be arrested, but he followed in. He slipped in with all these people milling about. I mean, no doubt this caused quite a stir and quite a commotion. And so in all that, he slipped in. And when they had kindled a fire, because he's out here, he's in the outside, like in the courtyard. And when they had kindled a fire in the midst of the hall, and here sat down together, Peter sat down among them. And a certain maid beheld him as they sat by the fire and earnestly looked upon him and said, this man was also with him. And he denied him, saying, woman, I know him not. His thoughts trying to blow his cover. Yeah, he's trying to blow his cover. I'm trying to be close, figure out what's going on here. And this thought's here blowing my cover. And after a little while, another saw him and said, thou art also of them. And Peter said, man, I'm not. More justification. This could get bad. What's going to happen to me here? And about the space of 1 hour after another, confidently affirmed, saying of a truth, this fellow also was with him, and he's a Galilean. And Peter said, man, I know not what you say, what thou sayest. And immediately while he spake, the cock crew. And the Lord turned and looked upon Peter. And Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had said unto him. And Peter went out and wept bitterly. Why is this important? Because there's a danger in running ahead. No matter what you're undertaking, there's a danger, and you think you're ready for more than you are. Peter, when he told Jesus, "I'll go to prison, I'll go to death, I don't care. I got your back. I'm with you. I'm sticking with you." He meant it, but he wasn't ready yet. Now, does this mean that, you know, Peter wasn't ever going to do anything? Well, no. It simply means that at that moment, Peter wasn't ready. I mean, he thought he was ready, but he wasn't ready. And there's a danger because if you run ahead and try to do something that you're really not ready for yet, it's not going to end well because you're not there yet. When it comes to like political stuff, I've heard people say, well, you know, discount what some people do because they say, well, you know, he's a hobbyist. He's a part-timer. He doesn't, you know, he's doing this is just kind of something he's doing on the side, this political activism. And my reaction to that is always the same. People have to start somewhere. I mean, nobody just wakes up one day and then jumps full time into being an advocate for the white race or something such as that. And if they did, really, how dependable would they be? I mean, you have to work your way up. You have to be ready to undertake whatever it is meaningful that you're going to do. And then again, in the context as Christian believers trying to do the work of the Lord, we have to be ready to do what he, and sometimes we think we're ready, and it's tempting to run ahead and try to do more than what we're actually capable of. And on the flip side of that, it's also possible to be like, yeah, ain't no way, I ain't ready for this. No. And the Lord's like, yeah, you are. You know, it just makes sense that there's an opposite side of that spectrum. Sometimes you're still sitting there kicking and screaming, going, no, God, I ain't ready for that yet. And God's like, yeah, you are. And he'll kick you in to doing, you know, basically like kicking you in the water. You can swim now. And because he knows you can. You don't think you can. You don't believe in yourself that you can. But there can come a point where God says, yeah, you're ready. Now get after it. Now, just as we talk about Peter here, we kind of have to get moving along here to cover all this because, as usual, I'm monologuing too long here. So as we wrap up here, as we talk about Peter, let's go to the book of John, chapter 21. Verse 15, Christ has been crucified and now resurrected, and he's making his appearances before ascending to heaven. And so when they had dined, Jesus said unto Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me more than these? He saith unto him, Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. He saith unto him, Feed my lambs. Now, think about this. Peter had talked all of this trash, basically, you know, with good intention, but he had told Jesus he was ready to go to prison and death with him when he wasn't, and had the humiliation of denying Christ three times. Now, we've had some time pass between now and where we're reading here. I want you to think for a minute about how much Peter was beating himself up over that. You know, I mean, really, he wept bitterly. We saw that, right? He wept bitterly. But what, do you think he like wept bitterly for 15 minutes and then he was cool? I mean, Peter was no doubt really beating himself up over this and having a really hard time with it, no doubt. And now Christ is hitting with, lovest thou me more than these? He saith unto him, Hey, Lord, you know, so I love thee. He saith unto him, Feed my lambs. Action. If you love me, here's what you need to do. Not empty words, not empty trash talk. Here's what you need to do. He saith unto him again the second time, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? He saith unto him, Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. He saith unto him, Feed my sheep. No empty words. Talking. And Jesus is hitting it with it's kind of, I think, noteworthy that he asked him the question the same number of times that Peter denied him over and over again. Another thing is when you've been down about something, when you're down about something and you're beating yourself up, you have this internal dialogue. And one of the things I was thinking about when we started covering this is, you know, Peter starts getting flustered because Jesus is asking him, do you love him? But in a way, this is like the internal monologue that Peter had probably been having with himself since denying Jesus three times, asking himself, do you even love him? You said you loved him. You said you would go to prison. You said you would even follow him to death, and you ran off. You ran off like a coward. You said you didn't even know him. You called curses down on yourself rather than take any blame, rather than being lumped in or face what he was facing. You ran off, said you'd have his back, and you ran off. You said you loved him. This is like a playing out, a working out of the internal dialogue that Peter probably been having with himself, beating himself up over this since this happened. He saith unto him the third time, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? Peter was grieved because he said unto him the third time, lovest thou me? And he said unto him, Lord, thou knowest all things. Thou knowest that I love thee. Jesus said unto him, feed my sheep. Verily, verily, I say unto thee, when thou wast young, thou girdest thyself and walkest whither thou wouldest. But when thou shalt be old, thou shalt stretch forth thy hands, and another shall gird thee and carry thee whither thou wouldest not. This spake he, signifying by what death he would glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he saith unto him, follow me. Now, again, Jesus is pointing out here that Peter's love is going to be shown by action, which is, again, everything in the scripture is about action. There's no room for empty words. Empty words results in, you know, I mean, like I said before, when Peter told Jesus, I'll follow you to prison and death, I mean, he meant it, but it was empty. It was emotionalism. When it came down to action, he wasn't able to follow through. But that doesn't mean that Peter was discounted. He just wasn't ready. And once again, Jesus walks through him with this and asks him three times. Same number of times that he denied Christ, he asks him three times, do you love me? Again, this is like a playing out of the internal dialogue, I believe, that Peter was having with himself before he sat down here with Jesus and beating himself up over it. Do you even love him? He's questioning himself. How? And Jesus is telling him, this is often referred to as Christ's reinstatement of Peter. I don't really think that's necessarily accurate. I think it was more like Christ reaffirming to Peter that, look, your role in my plan hasn't changed. You just tried to run ahead when you weren't ready yet. You know, but you're still going to carry out your role in my plan. And ultimately, you are going to follow me, even to prison and even to death. It just wasn't back there, because if you would have gone back there, you wouldn't have been able to do what I've got for you to do. Again, the plan itself is bigger than you, is bigger than what you think is important right now. So how does this all play out? We got to rock along here if we're going to fit this in a reasonable amount of time. How did this play out? Ultimately, Peter went forward, did the work he was supposed to do, but what kind of end did he have? Well, it's believed that Peter was crucified. And tradition holds that when he was crucified, he told them he didn't want to be crucified regular. That wasn't bad enough, because he said, I'm unworthy to be crucified as my master was, as my Lord was. And so they crucified him, hung him upside down. I don't even imagine how bad that is. I can't. So it's believed he was crucified inverted. He was crucified and add insult to injury. He was crucified upside down. That's a horrible end. So, you know, I mean, so he did. He ultimately did follow Christ to death even. So we move on to the next one. Andrew. What happened to Andrew, the disciple Andrew? Well, he was crucified. Believed he was crucified in Achaia. Later tradition describes him as being crucified in a spread eagle position, hence the St. Andrew's Cross of Scotland. That's kind of an interesting piece of trivia, I guess, if you would. But he was crucified too. You know, again, a horrible, horrible death. Moving on here, James, it's believed he was executed with the sword. So another, you know, he got struck down with a sword. Now we're at three here, you know, horrible, violent death. Let's continue on. Bad end, by the way. It sounds like a bad end. Let's see, looking, let's say John. John, he got banished. He got sent away. They banished him to the island of Patmos. It is believed that that's where he wrote the book of Revelation. And he's one of the few that actually, I mean, he spent all this time banished on this island in solitude. He was basically in solitary confinement. And, you know, after, I don't know, a lot of time there, he eventually died a natural death. He's one of the few that died a natural death, but still he was essentially put in banishment. He's in solitary confinement on this island for a time. And again, that wasn't a real good path, but he did die of natural causes. So there is that. We'll move on to the next. Philip died, believed to be martyred, at Hierapolis. I'm probably not pronouncing some of that stuff right, but bear with me because we're still going to make the point. Let's see. Bartholomew, also known as Nathaniel, he met his death by being flayed or skinned alive and then beheaded. Skinned alive, whether that was just like they literally peeled the skin off. More than likely what that means is they would take those whips and whip you. You have to understand, I mean, they would whip you and your skin would come flying off. These things were so brutal. They would flay you with these things and your skin would come off. And then they rounded that out with beheading him. That's not a pretty end. Thomas, also known as Doubting Thomas, he was the one that told that when everybody come back and said, "We done seen Jesus," Thomas was like, "Man, I seen him executed. I ain't gonna believe that until I put my fingers in the holes in his hands." Thomas, what kind of end did he? He got speared to death. He was speared to death near Madras. He another horrible end. Matthew, also known as Levi, it's kind of vague on him. It is believed that he was martyred in either Ethiopia or Persia, but he's one of the vague ones. Let's continue real quick. See here, the other James of the apostles, James, son of Alphaeus, he got to be martyred in Egypt. So that was his end. Moving on, Jude, he got killed in Persia. You're starting to see a theme here. It's believed that Simon, let's see here, he traveled to Persia. It's believed that he was either crucified or hacked to death. Judas Iscariot, we know what happened to him. He was the traitor. He hung himself right afterwards, you know, for his bag of silver. And we know what happened to him. So we don't need to really cover him. He carried out his role early on. And finally, the Apostle Paul, who wasn't one of the original dudes following Jesus around, but obviously so much of the New Testament is dedicated to Paul's writings. So we should cover him, of course. And it's believed he was beheaded in a place now called Trefontaine in Rome, and that the Church of St. Paul actually stands over his grave. So we see a theme here. All the apostles met these, for the most part. I mean, John died of natural causes after being in solitary confinement for quite a bit of time. None of these guys met a real pleasant end, and that's kind of... I wanted to get to the point of in the big picture of things, why that is. Now, we already covered in the scripture that Jesus told them that, you know, the hairs on your head are even numbered. So this isn't a case of, you know, how can on the one hand, you're so important. Look, God loves you. He even knows how many hairs you have on your head, and they're so important that they're numbered. And yet, the apostles all meet these horrible, gruesome ends. Why was that an important part of the plan? It had to have a reason. It wasn't just because like God's mean and wants to see people he loves die a horrible death. Even in these deaths, it was a part of the plan. Their mission was spreading the gospel throughout the world. a very difficult, and we look around, they fulfilled that mission. It was done. It's been done. It drives me crazy when people act as though this hasn't been finished yet, but it has. The gospel has been preached throughout the world. People go out here and try to find some, you know, Amazon pygmy bush people that are eating each other and have an IQ of 34 and be like, they ain't been preached the gospel yet. We got to go missionary. the gospel's been preached throughout the world. That mission's done. There's no point in going back and trying to redo it. It's already finished. But why? The point here is, why was this also the fact that virtually every one of these guys met a horrible end, a horrible, gruesome end? Why, in and of itself, was a part of the plan? Well, let me tell you why. And this is what kind of got me thinking about discussing this to begin with earlier in the week. Well, as this show airs, it'll be last week. Sven Longshanks did a show on the Daily Nationalist, and apparently some Spurg has written a book. A wise man once told me anybody can write a book, you know. And in this guy's book, he claims that Jesus and all of this was a hoax. It was a hoax invented by the Romans to get the Jews to be more pacifist. It was just a big made-up story. And likewise, some of the Jews believe, or they have taught over the years, is my understanding, that, you know, the whole thing where Jesus was going to be resurrected from the dead was a scam, that Jesus actually planned to drug himself to the point to where it looked like he died, and then they would like resuscitate him, and then he would convince everybody it was trickery. And even, you know, of course, they claimed that when Jesus' body disappeared from the tomb, it's because the disciples paid off the guards with shekels and stole his body away, so they could spread the lie that Jesus was resurrected from the dead. Some have said that, why would the apostles go around preaching the gospel? They were in it for shekels. They were looking to make a name for themselves. They were looking to make money off of this. So here we have all these various different, just a handful of the many claims that have been made trying to say it was all a game, it was all a hoax, it was all shilling for some money, trying to jockey for a position of power and influence that they didn't have. They were trying to start some sort of revolution to where they would be at the top of the religious hierarchical order. Let me tell you something. This is why this is important, and this is the point I wanted to make. This is why they had to die these gruesome deaths. A hoax made up. Sure, somebody will go along with that, but they ain't going to go along to it to where they're skinned alive. A lie? A scam? They actually stole his body away. He wasn't resurrected from the dead. Yeah, people would do things like that. People are capable of awful things. People aren't going to go and be crucified upside down for that lie. Trying to jockey for positions of political power via religion? Yeah, people will do that. Not to the point of being beheaded, though. At some point in time when they say, okay, well, what we're going to do here, since you keep insisting on doing this, we're going to skin you alive and then behead you. You're going to be like, whoa, wait a minute. Look, okay, yeah. Look, I'll tell everybody who wants to hear me, I made all that up. look. I was in this for some money, you know, and I wasn't in the in crowd. I wanted to be in the in crowd. I wanted to feel important in this life, and I wanted to make some shekels, you know. But hey, look, not anymore. This is why it was necessary at that time for them to meet this horrible end. The Lord already knew that a time would come that people would claim that this was all some sort of hoax. This was all some sort of fakery. And you know, again, human nature being what it is, it's easy to just look at that on its surface and say, oh, yeah, okay, I guess I believe that. Yeah, people would do something like that. And people would do something like that, but people wouldn't do something like that to the point of being skinned alive and then beheaded. People won't die for a lie. People will do a lot of things for money. People will do a lot of things jockeying for political power. But people won't go to be tortured to death for shekels. People won't go to a gruesome death for the sake of a lie, for a hoax. for something that's made up, for something that's not real. This fact, in and of itself, when you hear these hoes, somebody comes up, you know, with this latest claim, oh, Jesus, that whole Jesus thing was made up. So all of these guys went to a horrible, gruesome death for what? For a hoax? For a lie? No. Bullshit. All you have to do, you don't even have to have documentation. You have to just know human nature. No, people ain't going to do that. People are going to die for that. People will die for something they truly believe in. People will die for a principle. People will die for an idea. People will even die for their friends sometimes and their loved ones. But people won't die for a lie. People won't die because they're a part of a hoax or a scam. There's a line that people just aren't going to cross. So even as we wrap up here, even in this immense amount of suffering that took place, even in these horrific deaths that the early church, that the early apostles faced, they didn't face these deaths because God didn't care. That would be a contradiction to what Jesus had told them. They didn't face these deaths because, you know, God was indifferent. Those deaths, these horrible, gruesome deaths, they fit into, even in these things, they fit into God's bigger plan. I mean, on the surface, those servants of Satan, these wicked people that did this to him, they thought they were doing this, you know, we got him. We silenced him. But even in that, God's plan was carried out. No matter how things might seem twisted in your own life or you know, where am I getting any prior down or bad? You know, nobody's skinning you alive and cutting your head off. Nobody is going to crucify you upside down. Nobody's going to stab you with a spear or slay you with a sword. At least I hope not. Yet these people were able to face these gruesome fates knowing that they were also carrying out a bigger part of God's plan. We should strive to have that sort of faith ourselves. And again, don't be discouraged if you're not there yet. Peter wound up crucified in a brutal, brutal fashion. Back when he was spouting off to Jesus about he was willing to go to prison and death, he wasn't there yet. He wasn't there yet. He thought he was, but he wasn't. But he eventually was there. He eventually was at a place to where he would face even death. He did follow Christ even unto death. Maybe you're not there yet. Maybe you are and you just don't believe you are. But regardless, you have to have faith that, as long as you are seeking the Lord and trying to walk in His will, that whatever transpires, God knows how many hairs you have on your head. God does care about you. And sadly, even bad things, even unpleasant things, even persecutions, these too are part sometimes of God's bigger plans. It's not that He's doing them to you, but they fit in to that plan that's bigger than you, that's bigger than yourself. We've run long. We got to wrap up on that note. I want you to consider this, though. I want you to consider what these guys face. So that when people come along with these empty claims that this was all somehow a lie, that this was all somehow a hoax, that this was all somehow a scam, I want you to think, I want you to ask yourself, would you be able to, even as a believer, would you be able to face a gruesome death such as these guys faced? Would you be able to face that believing what you believe? Much less, would you face that for a lie? We're going to wrap up on that note. Thank you again for those financially supporting the show. Highly encourage you to do it. Much appreciated. And we're going to wrap up on that note. Thank you for joining us this week. We'll be back next week on Tuesday right here for the Church of the Lampshade.
listening to Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.